Rebel Force Radio is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Where the fun begins.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away.
This is Rebel Force Radio.
Your source for the Force.
Star Wars news and commentary.
With Jason Swank and Jimmy Mack.
I've seen Star Wars 500 times.
Star Wars number one.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
Now it's time for Rebel Force Radio.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Well, I guess we could look on the bright side of things. There's no shortage of Star Wars content to be looking at while we're all on this joint sabbatical together. In fact, we'll be sharing this week a couple of reviews of some new Star Wars items that might just fill the void. As you continue on your journey of being sequestered and isolated, though, I don't know, I don't feel very isolated. I got a couple of kids and the wife banging around all day long. They're always here. And so am I. And so is this guy here when it comes to Rebel Force Radio. My good friend and yours from Chicago, Jimmy Mack.
Hey, Jason. Hey, Star Wars fans. Yeah, we know everyone is pretty much hunkered down, as Jason likes to say. Hunkered down. That's how they say it in Ohio. We're all hunkered down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's what the governor calls it. Yeah, but he says, don't worry, we're Buckeye strong.
Buckeye strong and hunkered down.
And I am a Buckeye. I went to Ohio State. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean. Are Buckeyes really strong nuts?
Yeah.
Anybody know? Is that are they no, strong in the nut family?
I think he's referring to the citizens of the fine state of Ohio.
Yes, of course he is.
And all that. And you know, Jason, I took some time out this weekend to really look at my family and actually be very grateful for them, because I know a lot of people listening to the show right now are also hunkered down, and unfortunately they're by themselves, and they've been locked down for a couple of weeks now, and we're here to keep you company if you are out there and you are living by yourself and you unfortunately are quarantined like most of us are. We want to be here for you. We want to be a voice for you to fill that void that you might be missing in your life. And, of course, we're always open to converse with you via social media or at show@rebelforceradio.com if you want to send us emails. Or if you just want to get something off your chest, leave us a voicemail. There's many different ways to interact with Rebel Force Radio. So if you are out there and you're feeling a little isolated and alone, hey, join us and let's talk a little bit about Star Wars. And this week on Rebel Force Radio, we'll be doing a lot of that. And it's not going to be just me and Jason alone, but we're going to be joined by someone who certainly knows how to talk the wars.
Yeah, it sure does. We've got James Arnold Taylor showing up in the cantina. Grateful to have him back. And as I also said, by the way, I should say at the outset here, this is the Rebel Force Radio for this week's show, April 3rd, 2020. In addition to James Arnold Taylor in the cantina, I mentioned earlier we've got a couple of reviews coming up. Jimmy Mack has been going through Art of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker by Phil Zostak. And there it is. Finally, at long last, at long leaked, and now at long last, the actual book has arrived. That's right, it's March. I remember this thing was supposed to be out in December with the film, but apparently J.J. Abrams, he couldn't remember giving the interview. The interview that was in that book. Now you're just freaking people out. Sorry about that to the Patreon all access tier that's getting the video of this as Jimmy Mack gives the creepy eyes. But yeah, so Jim, we'll get to it. So that's his review. And then I'm going to be talking about the Skywalker Saga 4K. I got to just take the camera right off you. I just can't trust this guy. The Skywalker Saga 4K Blu-ray box set. I sprung for the Best Buy exclusive so that I could get my little mitts on physical copies of the complete Star Wars Skywalker Saga in beautiful, glorious Ultra HD. And all I'll tell you right now, before we get into it, is it does not disappoint. I was not disappointed. So, also, you want to stay tuned because Raycon True Wireless Earbuds, we've got a special offer coming up from them that you're not going to want to miss. But might as well get right into it, Jim. I'm thirsty. You're thirsty. What do you say we go into the cantina?
Let's do it. J-A-T, I should say. Good old J-A-T. You can't say J-T because then you think he's James Taylor, which... Right.
That's that other guy.
He's that other famous James Taylor. But our James Taylor also is well known for his voice, but not for singing. It's for doing some Obi-Wan things with it. James Arnold Taylor, Jet, in the cantina.
Star Wars cantina.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Well, Disney Plus may be your source for new episodes of The Clone Wars, but Rebel Force Radio is your source for a Clone Wars reunion of sorts. We had Ashley Eckstein on last week, and this week we have Obi-Wan himself, Mr. James Arnold Taylor, joining us.
Hello. It's Ken. From California.
Oh, wait a minute. It doesn't.
We got the lines crossed. You pressed the wrong.
May the force be with you.
But it looks like James.
Ben, we'll be taking calls later in the show.
Yes.
But wait a second. This is odd. It actually is James Arnold Taylor's address here punched up.
I'm doing deep fake.
What have you done with Mr. Arnold Taylor?
It is a deep fake of James Arnold Taylor.
Oh my God.
Yes.
But Ben, where is the real James Arnold Taylor? What have you done with him?
Last I saw, he was in a little padded room talking to himself.
Right. And that's where he's most comfortable in that padded room.
That's a green screen background of his studio. I took it off of the internet. I got a picture of his studio off the internet, and I am deep faking his face. And I'll do his voice. Hello there. This is Obi-Wan Kenobi.
See,
wow, that's impressive.
It is. If something happens to the real James Arnold Taylor, Ben, I think you got yourself a gig, man.
I'm awesome. I'm going to get him some food.
So you know what? Jason has a special introduction that he has at his fingertips, and we're going to listen to that. And during that moment, we want you to get the real James Arnold Taylor. Can you do that for us, Ben from California?
I'm going to do that, yes. And he can deep fake me.
Okay, perfect.
So this is what. All right, so this is the magic. This will bring out the real James.
James Arnold Taylor!
Wow.
There he is.
Man, Ben from California had hijacked my space. But he even knew the right shirt. That's what's impressive.
Well, it looks like you guys are the same size.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So maybe you could swap clothes. You know, you go
That's
over
right.
and wear some of his stuff. He can wear some of yours.
Well, I always know the true Clone Wars fans because the true Clone Wars fans listen to Rebel Force Radio and know Ben from California. So when I am at a con and people come up and they start talking about Ben from California, I know they're the real deal.
Well, I was just thinking about that last week when we had Ashley on the phone, because I think Ben from California made his debut on the show.
Yes.
When we were prank calling Ashley. Well, we weren't prank calling her. You were prank calling her. We already had her on the phone, and we said we would open up the call. We're going to open up the phone to callers. And then Ben from California was there. And Ashley, God bless her. She really took her time with you.
She was so sweet because she really was like, I'm not going to take a chance. And when Ben did his impression of Obi-Wan, she was like floored. She's like, that's really good.
That's right.
I do a Obi-Wan Kenobi impression.
And I'm wondering if you could, well, if maybe, because I know I would like to do that for all of you now.
Oh, I would love it.
Okay.
I would love it.
You must be mindful of the force of Sokotano. The force is very strong with you, my dear. What do you think? Is that good?
That sounds pretty good.
Oh, my gosh. That's really good. Jason, Jimmy Mack, what do you think?
I think James Arnold Taylor better be looking out for Ben.
I know.
I'm a fan of his work, and I study him, and I listen to everything he says. And as a matter of fact, when I look in the mirror, I also see him, because... Indeed, this is James Arnold Taylor.
No way! Are you pulling a prank on me, James?
Remember that? Remember that?
That was a great moment. That was
something tells me
moments.
That might be showing up on YouTube here in the next few days.
I would love that.
I was just thinking that. It's been a while since I heard that gem. So, yeah, be looking for that.
Well, it's
sure.
also been a while since we had a chance to talk to you, James. It's been some time. And how exciting is it for you to be able to tune in on these Fridays and watch new episodes of The Clone Wars?
This is so, it's very surreal, and it's great being with you guys. I love you guys. I am so happy to be here. The last time we talked, we were talking about, it coming back, but now it's back, and it feels like no time has passed. That theme kicks in, Tom Kane's voice comes on and tells you all about what's happening in that episode, and, you know, and it's like... It's life is good again. It really is fun. It's just a blast.
Does Tom ever get a little bit threatened by the fact that you do such a dead on impersonation of him that he worries he might become expendable? I know you can never have a
you
Clone
can never
Wars episode.
Get rid of Tom Kane. No, but
he's much taller than us, and he will give us a beating.
I love doing impressions of him. Yeah, you know, it's like because Tom is just he's just such a great guy, and we have voice offs a lot. So you know, then it's like I can do my Tom Kane and do the whole thing like this. Yes. So
I've never asked Tom if he does a James Arnold Taylor voice.
Nobody does a James Arnold Taylor. That every time, like, my friends in voice acting do my voice, they go, "Hi, how you doing?" They're like, they do this really squeaky, whiny kind of thing, and it's like, that's not how I sound.
That's not how I sound. That's not how I sound. That's not how I sound.
I mean, come on.
Come on. God, that's not how I sound.
Well, aside from Ben from California, nobody does a James Arnold Taylor that I'm aware of.
That's right. That's true. That's very true. You know, are you guys enjoying The Clone Wars?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, we were the ones who, were worried about the Clone Wars so much. We started the Save the Clone Wars campaign way back when. And to see it finally come back, really, with fresh episodes and have you guys reunited in the voiceover booth. Not only just have the show coming back, but having the people who were responsible for its initial success come back to bring it back. Guys like you, Ashley, Matt, Dave Filoni, and some of the other wizards over there at what used to be known as Lucasfilm Animation.
Right. Yeah. Joel Aaron doing a great job.
Yeah.
D. Bradley Baker deserving an Emmy for his work in this year. I've been saying it all over the place. I want to get him nominated for an Emmy for his work. Those Bad Batch arcs are just phenomenal. To think of one actor portraying all these characters.
It was like a one-man
show.
Voice,
but not. Yeah, it was him and Matt Wood. Basically, the first couple of episodes are just them. And, of course, Tom Kane.
Right.
Wherever I can do Tom.
But you don't. I mean, you have to stop and remind yourself that it's one guy. Because the action just plays as if it's a whole cast of actors.
Yep. The inflections, the tones, and how he puts so much into each one of these guys and their lives. You feel the texture and tone of these characters' lives through the voices that he creates for them. I really believe that. So it's really fun stuff. I love the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit of how much you were involved, actually, in Season 7? Were you finding yourself recording a lot of dialogue, or was it basically stuff you'd already done before?
Well, you know, originally I thought it was going to be a lot of just recycled dialogue that not recycled in that, you know, stuff people had heard before, but things that we had recorded for Season 7 originally. But it turns out, you know, Dave, because he used a lot of the storylines in Rebels that he wanted to tell in 7 and then if we had ever gone into 8. So he rewrote a lot of stuff. So there was actually a lot of new things. I'd say I probably had 6 or 7 sessions.
Oh.
So, you know, I mean, there's 12 episodes, but, you know, normally there would be 12 sessions then if I was in all 12, which I'm not. I'm not in all 12 of them. But so, yeah, there was actually a lot. There was a lot of pickup sessions because Dave was really set on getting this right. Like, he wanted the fans to really know that we strive to get each moment right, you know, especially when there's only 12 episodes. There's only so much time. And in that second episode where Obi-Wan has that great moment with Rex while Anakin and Padme are having their time there.
Yes, we I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say 3 times we went back in and redid those lines and tried them different ways and finessed them and stuff. But so much fun to do that. And one of the times we were doing it the first time, Kat Tabor was in there, Matt Lanter, Dee Bradley Baker, and Ashley was recording some lines. So she was in the room with us. And Dave, you know, we recorded a few times and he goes, "It's so good. We have it, but let's do it again a few more times just because it's fun to be here." So we just got to play with it more. And then he had us come back in and, you know, I had to finesse that. I hope you at least told Padme hello. You know, I mean, there was various ways of doing it. Not too snarky, not too heavy handed, not too funny, you know, and then Dee's reaction as well. So it was
fun. You know, one of the things I picked up on that scene, James, and we'll get real nerdy. This is like right out of the Saturday Night Live sketch where the nerds are interviewing William Shatner. But I mean,
it's business as usual.
Yeah, right. I guess we should. Yeah, who am I trying to impress? What, James Arnold Taylor? Come on. But I did notice that when that scene happened, I go, "Oh, this is the beginning of that relationship starting to get rocky." So you said you didn't want to do too much snark. I think you got it just right because it butts right into episode 3 beautifully.
Yeah, it's thank you for saying that. And it means the world to me. And it meant a lot to all of us because we're seeing where these characters are going now, which we never got to do before with the show. You know, we danced around it a lot in seasons, but never as much as we have this time. So yeah, I'm excited for everybody and what they're going to see.
I think this
seeing that little moment there where Obi-Wan is revealing to Anakin, "Hey, I know more than you think I know."
Yeah.
I mean, just that little character moment between the two of them, and then Anakin BSing him and giving him a sort of almost a knowing glance, like, "I know you know."
Yeah.
Because they're brothers, right? They're brothers, and they're super tight with each other. And they both know more about each other than each other knows about themselves. So, just that little moment, I'm going to carry that with me into my next screening of Revenge of the Sith and take note of how Obi-Wan is around Anakin when he's revealing his fragility about his relationship with Padme. Just those little cracks in the surface will become, I think, more noticeable now.
I agree. I totally agree and know that, you know, there could be even more moments like that where people feel like, wow, because we're really drawing closer to that. You know, that was the fun thing about Rebels, for example, was when I got to deliver that holocron message, was doing something that could add to the movie that had been around already for so long that we never really got to see. So that's the beautiful thing about the Clone Wars, is giving us those opportunities to expand the films in ways that I don't think anybody could have even imagined, even George at the time, until he got going in it and, you know, had so much fun doing it. So, yeah.
Well, that relationship was completely fulfilled. The promise of the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin was fulfilled through the Clone Wars because, you know, that was for me one of the, you know, being an original trilogy guy, kid growing up and watching the original films and hearing about what a good friend he was and how they kind of ran around the galaxy together. I just had these images in my mind, and we never really got to see that in the prequels much. We got to see a very fatherly son kind of relationship and then, you know, bitter rivals. It went to the extremes, but you guys just fit that in so neatly and so well.
that's the, I think, the beautiful thing about it. And I've been kind of, lately I've been saying, you know, it's kind of a comparison to what Star Trek was able to achieve as a television show. Star Trek was great because, you know, you got the first, the original, and then you got Next Generation. And I think even more so in Next Generation, where you really got to see a day in the life of these characters, and then they made movies and the action. And this worked in reverse. With Clone Wars, we got to go back and see the day-to-day. We got to see Anakin's room, you know, in the temple. We got to see posters on the wall and models on the shelves. And you didn't get to do that in the films. There wasn't enough time to do that. So that's been the beautiful part as an actor in this world of Star Wars, playing these characters in a way that nobody else has really got to play them in that, and that we got to open it up in new ways.
Have you ever been a part of a show before that had such a long break and then came back? And that's it's pretty rare. I think of Family Guy famously was, I think, canceled a couple of times, and but it was never, you know, 7, 8, 9 years like we've had with Clone Wars.
No, isn't it fascinating? Yeah, it is funny. There, it is funny also. There's a lot of things. I mean, like Final Fantasy X was a game that I did many, many years ago, and we come back every once in a while and revisit it. And the last year I did some new games in the voice of Tidus, this character. And so that was probably the closest I could get. Or Ratchet and Clank, the video game series that we've done for many years. There'd be times where, you know, I would do an episode and then or a video game, and then we'd come back and we did the movie. And that was really cool because it was the same kind of thing. But no, nothing like this. And I think that that's also because there's really been nothing like Clone Wars. And I do think that, you know, 10, 20 years from now, people are going to look back and go, that was the show that changed animation and changed it for the better and made it very hip to be an animated drama. Like, you know, who does that? You know, it's like George Lucas had that vision. I think time and time again, you know, because I'm a true believer of what George accomplished with Star Wars. And I just time and again see that he was so far ahead of the curve with everything. And I love that. I love that about Clone Wars, because here we are and we're back, and yet we're telling a story from a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
And George Lucas, of course, his fingerprints and resonance still is very strong throughout Star Wars. Was it ever on your mind that you're now working on a Star Wars that George Lucas isn't necessarily directly involved in anymore?
Ooh, that's a great question. And yeah, you know, It did and it didn't, because of Dave Filoni. Dave is the glue to the whole thing. He's the one that makes it all work in that. And so when we got back in the room, it was like no time had passed and nothing had changed. Yet you're working for a different company. The way things, you know, managed, even the way you're scheduled is different than how it worked before. So you're reminded of it there. But story-wise, the feel, the texture of the scripts, the tone and everything didn't really change. And I think that that's because Dave and George had such a deep connection on this, such a day-to-day operations that they were used to. And Dave had very much in his mind what he wanted to accomplish with this too. So yes and no, you know, no in the creative feel. So it didn't feel different, but yes, in that, walking in, you're like, oh yeah, this is, there's somebody else owns this now. It's a different franchise in some ways. Yeah.
James, was it lost on you, the fact that the, you know, Star Wars, like any other large community of people that are gathered around a common interest, there are factions and fractures that develop, and Star Wars is certainly not immune to that. But was it lost on you that within all of that fallout from Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker and people picking sides, that it was the Clone Wars that at one time was somewhat controversial to Star Wars fans, that it was the Clone Wars that united fans?
Not lost on me at all. I felt that, and I said it to Matt and Ashley and Kat. We were talking about it, and Dee as well, about how isn't this funny that, like, the one thing everybody can agree on is they're excited Clone Wars is back. I mean, that's fantastic, you know, and that's a real tribute to it. And I hope that Disney sees that as well. I, no disrespect to them. I know that in the beginning it was kind of like, oh, yeah, that's that's not our thing. So we're going to create something new. And then it's like, oh, people really like this. We're going to bring it back. I hope they see the importance of that. I hope they see the importance of the prequel storylines as well. I mean, honestly, I think they could have gone and just said, we're going to just bring this show back and not say we're going to end it. And tell adventures for another 10 years of just the various adventures that Obi-Wan and Anakin and Padme and all of them had. You know, I mean, why not?
hey, never say never. Never say never. And if the fans demand it and Disney recognizes the potential, like I know they gradually have been over the course of the last however many years, I can't help but keep reminding myself of a conversation you and me had back in 2013, the day it was announced after season five had wrapped up that the Clone Wars was being canceled. And you and me spoke, and I could hear the emotion in your voice. I knew that you were really busted up by this. Does coming back for season seven sort of help soothe some of those old wounds maybe that you felt back then?
Yeah, no, that's another great question. It does, because it was very emotional at that time. You know, we had just won Emmys and the show was finally kind of getting recognized as the real show that it was. It was like little movies every week, and it was so exciting. And we were doing, you know, USO tours, and we were just really kind of getting started is how it felt. So the rug got pulled out from under us, and now it's like, okay, this is great. It's seeing everybody's excitement, including Disney's excitement, and they've been wonderful with it. You know, that's been great. That's been really, really pleasing to all of us. We all got to go to the premiere of Rise of Skywalker, which was nice, which was the first time we all got invited as a cast to go to one of these premieres. And, you know, I've done voices in all five of the films. And so it was great to actually get to go and go to the real premiere.
Confirming now, all five of the films you had voices in. I know we tracked you in a couple of them, but that's good to know that all five.
But what about Rise of Skywalker? Where can we hear you?
That's what I was.
Have you been able to pick your voice out?
Jason
was just
That's all right. go for it, because that was the question I was going to ask. That's the most recent one.
No. I've been trying to find it. I'll tell you the truth is I think some stormtroopers and stuff. The mix on that film is very different than the other films.
It's more
and
dense.
We did so much stuff vocally in that movie that isn't there. And all of us, when we went, were like, oh, like, so they pulled back and they really let John Williams score fill the empty spaces where we had filled a lot of stuff. And I'm guessing that's J.J. Abrams going, you know what? We don't need it. We don't need it. But there was a ton of things. The you can hear all of us. I mean, there was a big group of us doing the chanting in Palpatine's underground lair.
Yes.
All that. I mean, that was like, remember Vanessa Marshall.
Do that again. That was you.
It was me and Vanessa Marshall and Steve Bloom and many other very talented voice actors in a big ADR stage on these microphones going, you know, just like creepy, weird stuff. And
did
then,
they give you any copy to look at?
No.
Did they say recite this? They just let you wing it.
Yeah. And it was and I had the two of them on either side of me. And it was so great hearing their voices. You know, Vanessa can get really creepy and like deep. And she does these weird kind of, you know, like Jiminy Glick on a bad day. it was great. And Steve Bloom, his voice goes so low that the whole room just shakes. You feel it in your chest. But we had fun doing that. Then there were the scenes in the desert with all those aliens dancing. Mm-hmm. And we did all that singing, and that was actually Lin-Manuel Miranda from Hamilton.
Right.
He did all of the scratch tracks, and he had them, and you could hear JJ in the background, like laughing and saying, "Oh, do this and do that." So they played us. We had in our ears. We had Lin in our ears doing the hi-ya, wee-ya, da-da, kind of like Lion King.
I remember he did the tune in the Maz Kanata's palace or castle.
Right.
But I had no idea that was Lin-Manuel Miranda doing the the village.
All that music, all that, yeah, the chanting of the whole place, doing that big ritual thing. And so that was all of us. It was about, I want to say about 20 of us. So we had him in our ear and we would just repeat after him. And David Collins was at the piano, giving us the tone, and he was conducting us. And it was very cool. Wow. And then the little babies in that scene too. There's the little alien babies. I'm in there. You can hear me laughing. doing little kids stuff. And but yeah, no, it was great fun. There was a lot of stuff in there that, and a lot of troopers. We did a lot of troopers. Sam and David and myself and Steve. We all did a lot of trooper voices.
Now, was that all done in one session, one day, or did you keep coming back for stuff like that?
Two sessions. Yeah, 2 days. We did that in 2 days consecutively, and Thursday and a Friday. And they are all day sessions. And it's great because you're at Disney. You're on the lot. And Doc is the engineer. You'll see Doc's name on so many movies. He's just a salty old engineer, recording of ADR stuff for every movie on the planet. And he's in there and he gives us all a bad time, and he's great. And then David is there, and it is just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to do.
So let me ask you, out of all the movies that you've done voice work for in the Disney era of Star Wars films, where can we hear you the most clearly?
In Obi-Wan in the Clone Wars movie. No.
Well, no, now come on.
That's a cheat. Now,
and I said the Disney era, so let's get it together,
right.
James.
Come on. I'm sorry. Come on. I was going for the joke. I would say probably The Last Jedi. I'm the and I think we talked about this in the casino scene. Everybody's favorite scene, the casino scene, where there's a little guy on the table. Place your bets. All bets are off. All right. That guy, that's me.
Right.
And that's very clear. And then he runs and jumps off the table and the creatures come blowing through there and wow and all that. And then in Rogue One, I'm pretty sure I am commence primary ignition. You know, when they're
Starkiller Base, yeah.
Yeah. And then a lot of troopers and a lot of rebels dying when Vader comes in. Spoiler alert. I think probably that the Last Jedi, that one, the casino scene would be the most prominent. Of course, you know, the very first one, Force Awakens, it was going to be me as Obi-Wan, but they went and got that other guy.
Oh,
and,
geez.
But I did record it originally. I was one that recorded, this is your first step into a new
world. Right.
And when I heard it, I didn't know if it was me or not. I was like, I can't tell. Is that me or you? And so I had to ask Matt Lewis.
Even so you can't tell. Imagine us.
That's great, man. That's great. So has anybody presented you with an 8x10 of that little cantina or casino creature that you play to sign? Here, James, will you sign this for me? So, all right, well, I'm throwing it out there. Who's going to be the first?
Yeah, who will be the first? That's right.
Get the autograph of that.
I signed a lot of troopers because I think in Force Awakens, I have some some lines very much in the clear that are me, you know, right there, sir. Yes, sir. Right away or something like, you know, as a trooper. That guy, and I've signed some of those, but no, not that little guy. But people know his name. I can't remember his name. I should know it, but.
Yeah, I feel like we should know it too. You know, if it's not an action figure, I really struggle committing the names to memory. That's what sort of cements it for me. And that's another thing that's kind of, you know, as we get older and we look back nostalgically at, you know, the old film. Oh, Jim's got the visual dictionary, so we're going to get to the bottom of this. You know, everything, you know, to everything there's a season, and we don't get that huge avalanche of action figures with these movies like we used to, where every character, no matter how minor, you know, got we played with on our bedspreads.
Now it was more fun in that regard. I loved that. And there was something about, you know, because the figures are beautiful now, but they're so intense. It's like, I loved the simplicity of those original ones. There's something, I mean, I get that feeling even right now thinking about it, and the smell of them and the feel of them. It's, and they couldn't move, you know, very well, but that was, I don't know, they were just awesome.
Yeah, so I would love to see, because, you know, that vintage retro look is coming back, and there's a whole new wave that's going to be coming for Empire Strikes. Oh, do we have it?
Well, hold on, let me make sure I can show you. This is him, right? You see
Yeah, let me put my glasses. Yeah, that's him.
Right. His name is Tham. THAMM. Tham.
Tham.
As in ham.
As in ham. Ham with a T.
He's currently the most popular on the gambling hall floor. His boisterous demeanor is encouraging to nervous gamblers.
That's right.
While his consoling nature helps cushion devastating losses. Jesus, they could be describing you here, James Arnold Taylor.
Oh, man, that's awesome. And, you know, also, I was watching Solo not long ago, and the kids in the beginning, you know, all the little kids is all like Oliver Twist kind of thing. There's one very much in the clear of a little English boy saying a line, "We've got to watch out before she comes," you know, and it's me.
That's you. Wow. That really sounded like a little kid. I noticed that at the very beginning. Yeah, in Queen Proxima's lair.
Yeah, Queen Proxima. Yeah.
Yes. That's right. Han goes rushing by the kids. It's like blue lighting in the whole scene. They're fretting over Queen Proxima. And then I hear Matt Woods say, "Proxima's gonna have her high." You know, it's Matt. I love when Matt shows up too.
My fondest memory of doing ADR for Solo was, you know, that scene where Chewbacca grabs that guy and does the head thing right into the dirt or the ground. When we all saw that, we were all like so concerned for the stuntman. Like, how did they do that? Where Chewbacca just body slams the guy, and they had us playing over and over. We all just kept watching. We had a lot of fun doing those. And I was also in that one, in the background, there's a big bald guy in the cage match. So I was Ron Howard's brother's voice double in that as well.
Clint
Howard. When Clint gets grabbed in the face by the robot.
Yeah.
That's me. I do his. Because I've done Ron Howard's voice for many, like Arrested Development and stuff. And so they're like, "Who could do Clint Howard?" I said, "Oh, I can." And so, some of it is Clint and some of it is me. And then there's a guy in the background that's this big, kind of heavy set bald guy saying, "All right, come on, everybody, take your bets over there." You know, and that's me as well. So, yeah.
You know, Ron and Clint have very different voices to my ears. They sound very different.
I agree. But strangely enough, sometimes they will get Clint to do some of Ron's stuff, and then they'll call me in and have me redo it.
I didn't know that you did Ron Howard on Arrested Development.
Arrested. Let's see. So George Michael went to the boat. What happened? Well, we'll just have to see. It was that kind of – yeah, there was a couple episodes where it was me doing him. Wow. So hopefully you can't tell.
Now, have you, I don't know if we've ever asked you this question before, but have you ever had the opportunity or have you ever been confronted by someone who you've done the voice doubling work for? I'm not asking if there was any, issues or anything, but I mean, what's that like when you run into somebody?
Johnny Depp has reached out to you in the past.
Johnny Depp. Yeah. Really? And he's been the coolest one about it, because I spent a day on set with him. Back when there was this ride or an attraction at Disney World, which they got rid of, which was ridiculous. I wish they hadn't. It was the Legend of Jack Sparrow, of Captain Jack Sparrow. And I was the skull in that, because I'm also the skull at Disney World when you dead men tell no tale. And stuff.
Oh, wow.
But when he came in, "Arr, Captain Jack." So I spent the day up on a scaffold talking to Johnny Depp, who was in full Jack Sparrow regalia and all. And
wait a minute.
And so at the end of the day,
I just want to get this right. You spent the day on a scaffold
with
Johnny Depp in full Captain Jack Sparrow rig. That sounds like a fever dream, James. That doesn't sound like something a normal
person. Yeah. It was awesome. So he was on a green screen. I was giving him his eye line because my character was an animated skull that just floated around the whole place. And so he was this amazing hologram of him that they used with projection. It looked like he was right there in the room with you if you ever went in and experienced that, The Legend of Jack Sparrow. And so they were shooting it all for him. And so I needed to be there in case he wanted to ad lib and to give him the eye line. And so they had me up on a scaffold with a microphone strapped to my head. And I just would say, "Arr, Captain Jack, good to see you." And then he would shoot guns at me and throw bottles at me. And he was the nicest guy. He really was a sweetheart of a guy. And just very,
very low key and just, yes, just happy to be there. And so it was like, do I tell him that I'm his voice double? Because I've been doing some. So when we did the Willy Wonka stuff, he was filming Pirates and he said, you know, give me his phone number and his cell phone number, because he was listening to all the tracks I was doing. And if I made anything that he thought should be finessed, he wanted to call me and work on it with me, which, you know, I mean, really pretty nice. So, yeah, he was a sweetheart of a guy.
And no one ever said, no, that guy doesn't double my voice ever again. Get him out of there.
Like David Spade will tell people, get that James Taylor guy. I'm too busy. I don't want to.
You better be careful. You could probably take his show too. You know,
I know. Right. I think he has a podcast. I think too. So he could,
does he? Yeah.
Yeah,
I
think so you could just do the whole thing. So. No one would know.
That's right.
Hey, speaking of podcasts, how's your thing going?
My podcast is great. Thank you for asking. You know, I really give you so much credit, Jimmy, for helping me out getting the whole thing up and running.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man.
The show is called Talking to Myself. I've taken a little hiatus over the last month or so, and people keep saying, we need new episodes, we need new episodes. And with this whole lockdown, I should be doing more episodes. But I've been shooting videos and putting them on the YouTube channel of me playing cards with people, with just trying to do fun things. Like, you know, so if you're sitting down to play a game of cards with me, so I'm just looking straight into camera like this, and my wife plays the other hand, and we play hands of gin and and crazy eights and stuff. But the podcast has been kind of on hold because, I'll be honest, I there's so many things that I can't talk about with work that it's like I'm almost like waiting for things to come out so I can actually then have things to talk about on the show.
Yeah.
And then also just with the way the climate of everything, it was like, you know, sometimes you just go, gosh, I don't know. I don't know what to talk about. And I would get a little serious. So I actually ended up recording like 4 episodes that I ended up not putting out because I'd go off on tangents that were a little too serious. Mm. And I thought, you know, my show's supposed to be like a positive, uplifting thing. So I'm going to get back to it this week. You know, it's been a tough, you know, we've all had kind of a tough time here, I think, kind of changing with the world. And so I was like, okay, I gotta fix this. So,
well, speaking of that, we obviously, you know, we're here to talk about Star Wars. We don't want to dwell on it. But when Jim mentioned you were coming on the show, I was very excited because I said, oh, this is the perfect guy for this time. This is the perfect person because you're known for being a very uplifting, positive person.
Thanks.
You like to keep things positive and stay in a sort of a growth mindset. So for those that are out there and they're maybe feeling a little down, what does James Arnold Taylor say to them? What helps you when you get down?
Well, you know, I mean, and not to get overly spiritual, but my faith is a huge part of my life. And that certainly is what gets me going. And that's also where I wake up in the morning. I start my day on my knees and I've just been really hopeful and grateful lately. Just that, you know what? I think we got this. I think we're going to take care of this. I think we're going to do the right things. And I think we're all going to come together. And I honestly believe that maybe, just maybe, we'll all start to kind of see the benefits of family and togetherness and more so from all of this, hitting the reset button, you know, because I was not really for it. I was kind of against it, quite frankly. I was like, I don't know about all this. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it could be a really good thing for all of us to be able to reset and get time away from the computer, away from the phone, start reading again, going outside. I can't tell you how many people are walking outside. My wife and I walk every day anyways. Mm. And now we're seeing families out there. We're seeing people, you know, just it's great. So I'm really encouraged by all of this in that I would say to people, don't stay home watching the news. That's a bad idea. That's the wrong idea. Get out there, write something, paint something, draw something, create something. If you're not somebody that is artistic, just get out there and look at a tree for a while. I know I sound like, you know, hippy dippy dude, but I'm telling you, man, it's a beautiful world. Well, and I think we should just take it in a little bit more. And I think this is a great opportunity to do it. So that's the positive, James's positive note today.
Well, and for those that don't know, I mean, you're a man that's speaking from experience, because at one time here, you are somebody who makes a living through his voice. And at one time you found yourself unable to speak.
Yes.
So, I mean, that must have felt like rock bottom and that the world was not going to continue on for you.
You know, that's a great point. I mean, it is kind of like, I think when all of this hit, I thought, and my wife actually said, she goes, you know, we've been through worse, you know, because I did. I got exposed to black toxic mold. I lost my voice. I was really, you know, in a desperate situation there, and for a long time and for many years, and I had to rebuild my voice and get my health back. And so this is like, yeah, we can do this. I felt very positive and uplifted by all the things I learned from then and putting them into play now and just seeing that, you know, it truly is true. If you surround yourself with positive people, you feel more positive. If you surround yourself with negative people, you feel more negative. Mm. So surround yourself with positive people. Watch and listen to wonderful things like this beautiful, wonderful podcast that is just fun and exciting and get you thinking. You know, my wife does puzzle books. She does puzzle books because it's good for your brain. And it's like, do whatever it is that keeps you busy in a good way right now. And you'll get through it. You'll really get through it. And yeah. Feel even better and probably learn a lot more, you know?
Right.
So it's a, we homeschool my daughter too. So, you know, yeah. It's like with the homeschooling of my daughter, it's like, it's no different for her except actually for school, but she gets out a lot more. She's more social. People always go, oh, homeschoolers aren't social. They're extremely social. We have a homeschool social group that isn't able to do anything except by Zoom now. And all the kids are like, oh, this is a bummer. So, you know, yeah. But the best part is I come in, you know, she's on these Zoom calls now, right. And I'll come in behind her and I'll do like the bunny ears, and all her friends, of course, know who I am. And, you know, so I'll go like, hello there. And then I'll leave. So it's been fun. I've been fun having fun messing with them all.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, James, thank you so much. You've taken so much time to hang with us. Oh, and is there anything you want to let our listeners know that you got coming up to keep their eyes open for? I know it's kind of a crazy time where everything's sort of up in the air, but what do you got to plug?
Yeah, I will say, you know, the beautiful thing about being a voice actor is, you know, I'm doing all my work from my home studio now, where I did a good portion of it usually, but I can do even more. And the one thing I will say is there is stuff coming out. There is, you know, I can't announce anything, but I'm working on a lot of really exciting projects that I know all of your fans are really going to be excited about. I can't wait, you know, for them all to experience them. One of the coolest things recently that we didn't touch on was Lieutenant Beck at Rise of the Resistance, Galaxy's Edge. So I can't wait for everybody to be able to get back to Star Wars Land, Galaxy's Edge at Disney World and Disneyland, and ride Rise of the Resistance, because Lieutenant Beck is the one that the Mon Calamari that takes you on the journey, and I'm the voice of Lieutenant Beck.
So. Wow. So you're the man. You're the, you know, I did get the chance to go out to Anaheim last summer, and go on the Millennium Falcon and all that. That was before Rise of the Resistance. So when I'm going through the queue, am I hearing your voice coming out over those loudspeakers as well? I could have sworn I picked Dee's voice out.
Yeah. Dee's voice is definitely in there. No, I don't think Beck is in that stuff, but, afterwards for sure, but he's the voice throughout the entire ride, so he takes you through the whole thing.
For Rise,
amazing. Yeah, he's an amazing animatronic. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And so I'm sure people have seen it online. If not, you know, you can see the whole ride. It's a fantastic ride. It's like 15 minutes or at least, and it is quite an adventure, but it is fun because throughout the whole thing, you hear me in it. And it was great because I originally was going to be just a scratch track for them. Mm-hmm. Disney was like, you know, let's put a scratch track in, a template, and see if we'll get a celebrity in there. And then they realized, oh, we really like this character. And it was my homage to John Hurt, who I doubled for many years for Hellboy and other films, Beowulf and such. I did a lot of his doubling in films. And John Hurt had that wonderful voice that was right there, very smoky. So when they said, we're doing a Mon Calamari, I'm like, well, I don't want to do Akbar, obviously, you know.
Right.
I've done some of Akbar's lines in the past. It's a trap, but it's all right there. And I thought, well, what if you take it up just a little, refine it a little bit more, and make it more like John Hurt? So.
Right. He's Akbar from a better neighborhood. James, you've been so great again. James Arnold Taylor tells you, he says, go out and look at a tree. So that's what I want everyone to do. Take us with you in your earbuds and go out and look at a tree. Practice social distancing. But if you feel so inclined, you can go ahead and hug that tree if you want, right?
Okay. Hugging trees is permitted. Yes.
Yeah, we can do that.
Everyone says, hug the tree.
Awesome. It may fill a void for you as we're dealing with social distancing. So thank you so much, James. You're the best, man.
Thank you. It will give you the high ground.
There we go. Good enough yourself, huh?
Rebel Force Radio.
Are we always great to talk to James Arnold Taylor. Big thanks to him for hanging with us in the cantina. Do want to take a brief pause and thank the folks over at Raycon. And Jimmy's holding up his wireless earbuds. I'm going to hold up mine as well. Oops, wrong camera. Check them out. These are great. These really are great. You know, it's very obvious, especially with everything going on in the world today. It's a wireless world, and everybody needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. But here's the thing. Before you go out and drop hundreds of dollars, I mean, you've seen these at the electronic stores. You've seen them on Amazon. These wireless earbuds can cost you a lot of money. You need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. These things are at about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds on the market. And they really do sound just as amazing as the other big top brands that you know. Their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, are the best ones yet. Get this, 6 hours of playback time, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise isolating fit. In fact, you're going to get the perfect fit for on-the-go listening and for taking phone calls. And I will tell you one thing that I have loved about these is that I'm on video conference calls all day long now. So I'm working from home. The day job is keeping me at home. And what I love about these is these last at least 3 to 4 times longer than those other earbuds that I have. And that's really important when you're on a conference call that your earbuds don't die out on you. And these won't die. They'll last pretty much the whole workday.
You know, I've had earbuds that also just simply fail me in the process of actually conducting those conference calls hands-free with the wireless technology. How have these been working out for you in those situations?
These are working out fantastic for me. They don't fail. They connect very easily to whatever device that I need, whether it be my computer or my iPhone or an iPad. It doesn't matter. They connect beautifully, and the sound quality is incredible. And they do have a lot of bass. So unlike some of the other wireless options, Raycon earbuds, they are also quite stylish and discreet. That's the thing. There's nothing that dangles down. No wires, no weird stems. Somebody once accused me of having straws in my ears at the office one time. So the company was co-founded by Ray J and celebrities like Snoop Dogg, Cardi B, Brandy. They're all obsessed with Raycon. So pick up a pair and see what all the hype is about. A great thing to listen to Rebel Force Radio with. And here's the deal. This is what we tease you at the beginning of the show. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. 15% off. That's right. 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/RFR. That's buyraycon.com/RFR. 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/RFR. You'll be glad you did. You'll be listening in style. And those batteries last a very long time. We thank the folks at Raycon very, very much for their support of us here at Rebel Force Radio. Okay. I've been hearing a lot about this. This better be good. We have an update coming from the mean streets of Chicago and the ragtag group that Jimmy hangs out with, called mainly from our Patreon community, the Babu Freaks.
We got a Babu Freaks update. We got a Freaks update. Yeah, that's right. The Babu Freaks, a.k.a. the Chicago crew. They surprised me last week with a video to celebrate my birthday, which was last Saturday. We had all planned to get together and raid the Real Art Warehouse in Berwyn, Illinois. And this place is a great place. It has amazing pop culture stuff, lots of good Star Wars stuff. So we're going to go raid that and maybe have a few celebratory drinks. But that all got put on the sidelines But the Babu Freaks had to make their presence known on Saturday as I was celebrating with family only and Facebook greetings, which is something I haven't done in years. I've been hiding my birthday because it's a lot of work to respond to birthday greetings. And there's just some years when I really, quite honestly, downplay my birthday a great deal. But this year, we're all stuck at home, and I wanted to connect with the public at large. So I opened up the Facebook, put my birthday out there, and the greetings all spilled in. And the Babu Freaks sent me a video that they picked up. Well, I guess they purchased from a company called Cameo, cameo.com. Get personalized messages from your favorite celebrities.
Heard of this. Okay. Yeah.
Celebrity Gus.
So, yeah. So if you can actually purchase these greetings.
Yes.
From these celebrities through this app called Cameo, this service called Cameo, and there are a lot of different celebs on this thing. So they did this.
Yes, they did it. And you know, our friendship is its foundation is firmly in Star Wars. So they found a Star Wars celebrity to wish me a happy birthday. And it's pretty funny. I shared the video with Jason.
I have not seen it.
I would not let Jason watch it. And I'm not going to say who it is, but he is definitely a Star Wars celebrity. I believe he was signing autographs at a table in Chicago at the last convention last year. And
all right, that's a hint. That's a clue.
That's a clue. That's a clue. Right. So our podcast audience is going to hear the message, and our Patreon audience is going to actually be able to see the message because members of RFR All Access get full show video each and every week. So here's the video, the gift to me from the Freaks, the Babu Freaks, my buddies, my Star Wars pals here in Chicago.
Jimmy Mack, how you doing, boss? Barry Harmon and the Babu Freaks want to wish you the biggest and bestest happy birthday out there. And they asked for a friend of mine to do a little something for you. That friend is Kaz. So without further ado. Jimmy Mack, how are you? Well, whether or not you recognize this voice, some people may call him the greatest pilot in the galaxy. I just call him Jimmy Mac's boy. That's right, the Jimmy Maxter's friend. So here we go. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Jimmy Mac. Happy birthday to you. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Happy birthday, Jimmy Mac. Kaz is probably out there hanging out with all of his Naval Federation alumni. Or he's following Poe across the universe, throughout the galaxy, after Episode 9. That's probably what's happening. But I think most likely he's throwing up a blurg fire for you at Aunt Z's, wishing you a happy birthday. Take care, Jimmy Mac. Take care, Babu Freaks. You guys are the best. Take care.
Oh, that is amazing. That's fantastic. Oh, Kaz, the voice of Kaz. I don't know his name off the top of the dome here, but
Christopher Sean
is his name.
The voice of Kazuto Ziono from Star Wars Resistance, a TV show which I've been harshly critical of, and the voice behind a character I've also been harshly critical of. But that's all in the past now. Once you get a birthday greeting message from him. He's in. We're best buddies now, at least in my own personal headcanon. Kaz is cool. Kaz is now cool, as far as I'm concerned. And I want to thank Barry Harmon and the Babu Freaks.
Which includes
Brian Klein and Tyler Page. And maybe
for the
Billy Mack might be known as a freak.
Well, yeah, from time to time.
Yeah, yeah.
Saturdays particularly. But this is a great thing to do for people that where you go, I don't know what to get this. This guy has everything. Look at his Star Wars room. I know he loves Star Wars. What do you get this guy? You know what you get him? You get him a birthday greeting from Kaz.
Yeah.
From Star Wars Rebels. Yeah. That's awesome.
Barry sent it to me in the morning. I hadn't even got out of bed yet. You know, that was, he was like, Kaz is wishing me a happy birthday right here on my phone. I'm like, oh,
that is awesome.
Like, I better cover awesome. Up. But if you do go to cameo.com and do a search of Star Wars, you will see actors like Femi Taylor, who is Ula from Return of the Jedi, Taylor Gray, who was Ezra from Star Wars Rebels, T.C. Carson, Mace Windu from The Clone Wars, Jonas Suotomo.
Suotomo,
yeah.
Right? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah, the new Chewie. He's in there. Amit Best. Jar Jar Binks. You can get a message from Jar Jar Binks. And there's a few others.
Very cool.
Ray Park and Daniel Logan, temporarily unavailable.
Oh.
But, oh, you're seeing
Oh, Emily Swallow, you know, our old pal. Hey, by the way, I just wanted to make a note so that Emily Swallow's husband, who's a fabulous Broadway actor, Chad Kimball, he is one of the ones that has been officially diagnosed with COVID-19, though the last I have heard, he's doing much better. So that's great news. As we all know, New York is really, really the epicenter of what's going on there. And we did get some messages from folks saying, hey, did you know that Emily's husband was diagnosed? And yes, we did know that. And we send our best wishes out to him and her. And I think that they hadn't been together in a while. They hadn't seen each other. They were doing he's in New York doing stuff. She was out in L.A. doing stuff. And so I'm hoping that they are together where they belong. So look at, yeah, there's a lot of stars. Steve Bloom. We just had James Arnold Taylor talking about Steve, Vanessa Marshall, Dominic Monaghan. Oh, look at that. Tom Kane.
There he is. Now, is that Tom Kane or is that a James Arnold Taylor deep fake?
Can you imagine if James started doing deep fakes on Cameo? So you think you're getting Michael J. Fox, but it's really James.
Dude, I'm telling you, that's the next step. That's the next direction. You know, we had Josh Robert Thompson on with us a few weeks ago, and he was talking about how technology has moved the impression up a notch to where it's more than just sound alike. It's now completely masking yourself in the likeness of the individual you're doing an impersonation of. So I imagine that stuff will become more accessible to people. Mm-hmm. I guess it will. And we'll all be doing it, you know? We'll all be doing it. Like, every week there'll be different hosts of Rebel Force Radio. Some weeks it'll be, who do you do? You do a great Grandpa Munster voice. We can have Grandpa Munster himself hosting the show.
Rest in peace. Grandpa Munster, yeah. I mean, that would be great.
See, I want to hear
he's a big Star Wars
Grandpa
fan.
Munster say, my good friend and yours, Jimmy Mac. Yeah.
My good friend and yours, Jimmy Mac.
And then I'll be all like Harrison Ford, you know. it'll be Harrison Ford and Grandpa Munster hosting Rebel Force Radio. But I need to be someone outside the Star Wars realm.
Yes.
Who do I do? I could do probably a borderline Doc Brown.
You do a great John Madden.
I don't even remember hearing John Mann talk in years and years, but I was probably leaning more toward a...
do a Harry Carey?
Oh, okay, we could do that, yeah. Now, see, that's a pairing that makes more sense. Grandpa Munster and Harry Carey hosting Rebel Force Radio. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are recording this on Wednesday night, April 1st, April Fool's Day. But for the most part, April Fool's Day has been canceled this year. And I am down with that.
But I am predicting a big comeback for April Fool's next year. And if we survive this mess and or if I still have any brain cells left by the time 2021 rolls around and I remember, then you can count on Rebel Force Radio dropping on April Fool's Day next year, and it will be hosted by Grandpa Munster and Harry Carey.
You know, we lost probably about 70% of our audience. They have no idea who Grandpa Munster is.
Oh, come on. Don't you guys watch me TV?
I'm telling you.
You don't know the Munsters? Come on.
I know. No.
Who cares? Listen,
we do this for ourselves anyway.
We're doing this for us and all the other old dudes who listen to this and like Star Wars. So that's
I've hit that age, and I guess I've been there for a while where I'll throw out a reference at the day job, and I realize I'm working with a lot of 20 somethings, a lot of early, you know, young 30s, and what a difference that makes in terms of their pop culture exposure and the awareness, you know.
Well, also, but let's not age ourselves. It's not like you and me were around for the first run of the Munsters.
No. But here's the difference, okay? This is the big difference. So when I was a kid, it was the stuff from the 60s and 70s that was on after school for me.
Right.
That was what the reruns were.
Yeah.
So for the kids in their 20s now, you know, it's like old school for them is like stuff like Saved by the Bell.
Right.
In classic 90210.
You know, and we grew up in the rerun era. You know, that was really our entertainment because there was no widespread cable or satellite or internet. Come on. We had, you know, your basic broadcast stations and a few UHFs, and it seemed like all the markets played the same packaging of shows. It was the same classic sitcoms, the same classic dramas, everything from Perry Mason to Dragnet to Get Smart to the Munsters to you name
Laverne
it, you
and
know,
Shirley, Happy Days,
Dobie Gillis,
that's right, Mr. Ed,
My Car Bob,
My Mother the Car,
that's what it was. What was the Bob one?
My Car Bob.
Isn't there a Car Bob? There was Car 54, Where Are You?
Car 54, which actually, speaking of Grandpa Munster, was the first time that Al Lewis and Fred Gwynn worked with each other.
That's right. So it's 54. Almost like the prequel to the Munsters, you know.
Right. Andy Griffith Show, how do we not mention that? Another classic that was on after school.
Mm-hmm. But so, like, we didn't grow up first run of this stuff. Let's not age ourselves. Right. But it was very much a culture whose teat we sucked on very much as kids. And, you know, I mean, that's just how it was. So
it was the golden age of TV, you know, the first golden age of TV.
Yeah. So,
all right.
So mark it down on your calendars for April 1st, 2021. You're going to be hearing some Grandpa Munster. You got Al Lewis, okay, and Hall of Fame broadcaster Harry Carey discussing the wars.
May the force be with you, young man.
Yeah!
Holy
all right.
Cow.
How about we cleanse the palate with a little bit of listener mail? How about that? Do it.
You must contact me.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message after the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him. It's a trick. Send no reply.
What up, Jason? What up, Jimmy? This is the Registered Nerd out of quarantine, but still sunny and beautiful Southern California. Hey, oh my gosh, dude, the episode on March 21st you guys released with the big argument, Luke Skywalker and Rey, oh my gosh, dude, I have to say that was just wonderful. Thank you guys so much for going to battle with one another. But I have to say, I think it was Jimmy who was saying that Luke went through much more difficult circumstances than Rey ever did. And this is one of my thinking, is that Rey does not have a connection deep enough to feel the depth of loss. So if you have that distant uncle that passes away, as terrible as death is, it doesn't resonate with you. So Luke Skywalker meets Obi-Wan Kenobi, sees the only family that he has die in front of him, goes on the hero's journey, then sees the little mentor that he had, the only connection left, die in front of him. Then he goes to get training. Then he goes to see his only family left, captured, beat up, hurt. He faces his father. He's sitting there, like, in anguish. Like, that hero's journey is so much more deep. It resonates so deeply on a greater level than Rey having kind of forced connections and then losing those connections. She, yes, as terrible as it is, and, you know, being alone and, you know, and having those, not having that family. Oh, it's awful and terrible. I don't want to minimize that in real life or in storytelling. However, when you compare it to Luke Skywalker, it is eons different. Eons different. Yes, they might have had special force capabilities leading up to that in their youth, but oh my gosh, like, I have to say, Luke Skywalker way more involved emotionally than Rey could ever be, and that's just naturally because of her upbringing. What do you guys think? My gosh, that was great. I love you guys. May the force be with you.
All right, man. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. That's some good analysis. We're just here to entertain. I think you reversed the roles. It was Jimmy Mack that was claiming that Rey's suffering was just as substantial, if not more, than Luke's, and I had the opposite point of view. I think that where we agree, and what registered nerd here, what you're saying, I think you used the right word, which is different. Their experiences are vastly different. Luke, I think, understood his connection to the galaxy at large maybe earlier, perhaps, than Rey did. So when he talks about the connection, you know, between the father, and some of this happened outside of Luke even knowing, but the connection to his father that Obi-Wan had and then Yoda had, and then he keeps losing these touch points with his identity. You know, they're dying in front of him, and then he finally gets to his father, and his father is the ultimate villain, blah, 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 blah. I'm with you on that. I'm totally with you on that. Conversely, and I think this is the point that Jimmy was making, is that you don't get much more traumatic than a child, especially a young child, being torn away from their parents, either being abandoned. And actually what we're kind of learning now, Jim, is that, you know, after seeing The Force Awakens, I assumed that that was the scene of an abandonment, that these parents just left her. Whereas now we're seeing that it was not, it was a kidnapping likely of the parents, and they left Rey there. So she must have seen perhaps some sort of scuffle or some conflict where Ochi was taking the parents and to Palpatine, right?
Well, it was Ochi's ship.
Yeah.
So certainly there, but I mean, it was just how it was presented. I kind of tend to lean toward the whole sold for drinking money kind of claim that
You buy that. You think that that's,
well, maybe they thought, because we're still filling in so many of the blanks with, yeah, Rey's story, whereas Luke's story is pretty straightforward, and I think we can really track his progress the whole way through from the day that Ben drops him off.
It's all on screen with
it's
Luke.
All there. Yeah, and even, yeah, more to come in the Kenobi series, I certainly hope.
Mm-hmm.
But with Rey, we have to fill in so many of the blanks. So, right. We don't know what exactly were the circumstances with them leaving Rey behind with Unkar Plutt. I think maybe Plutt did pay for her to use her as a slave, and the money was maybe an attempt to bribe Ochi or something, but the real purpose was to keep Rey hidden from Ochi.
See, right. That's what I think. I think that there was a deal that was struck. Uh-huh. And I kind of look at Unkar Plutt almost like a Watto-like character, though maybe less endearing.
But yeah, I mean, Watto at least had a heart. Plutt was really, he was cruel and...
But did Ray's parents know that side of him? You know, I mean...
Right. Probably not.
It's hard to imagine. Or it was done in haste.
And
the only thing that they knew.
And think about
was
it.
This.
I'm sorry, I'm talking.
No, it's all right. Go ahead.
But young Ray, we only get that little glimpse of her for a handful of seconds.
Come back!
Yeah.
Right. I failed to do the performance justice. But. We only get that moment, and that's just enough to get a taste of the trauma she's going through mm-hmm. and the nightmarish situation she's in. And then Unkar Plutt's holding her arm. He's like, quiet, girl. And she's, you know, that might be the first time he's actually starting to exhibit his true self to her, too. You know, maybe he was like, you know, yeah, we'll put her in Unkar Plutt's daycare, and it's going to be wonderful, and it's going to be high-five stickers and lollipops every day. And then the second the parents are off on the ship, he starts then being abusive to her and everything.
Right.
So now she has to adapt to this new reality without her parents, and her new reality is extremely abusive. And so I think Unkar Plutt kept her under his roof for a while.
That's what I'm thinking. And then she got old enough and she was like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
But she still needed him to trade in her junk for, you know, the little loafy bread that rises.
She became useful to him because she was very skilled as a scavenger, above average, way above average. So she was bringing back the good stuff out of those Star Destroyers, and he was able to resell it for whatever markups he resold it for and was able to give them just those rations. And those rations, which I think were scavenged out of the Star Destroyers. For all we know, Unkar Plutt is sitting on a pile of rations because Ray brought that stuff to him. And now he's making her work to get it. You know, I mean, so that's a pretty rough. That's a pretty rough existence for a kid to have to go through and grow up in. I mean, that's a rough existence. She had no love in her life.
I think that what kind of fueled my fervor in that discussion, other than it was fun, and it did exactly
what you wanted to do. You were just like, oh.
No.
This.
But what I think really bugs me is the fact that JJ and Ryan and the rest of the creative team there behind the sequels, they make us work so hard at putting these pieces together.
Yeah.
And that's why I sometimes am so overly critical. Whereas, as we said, Luke's journey, you know, George was his goal was about putting the epitome of the hero's journey on the screen, to the point that he went and he researched the Campbell stuff, he researched other films, and tried to create this amalgam of the quintessential, that's the word I'm looking for, the quintessential hero's journey. And that's what makes it, I think, so impactful and powerful, and why 40 some years later, we're still talking about it and doing a podcast every week about it because it is that incredible. But the Ray stuff, when you tell me, I mean, I've got kids, you tell me, hey, who's got it worse? Luke Skywalker, who never knew his parents, and the only parents he ever knew were Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru, and he didn't lose them until he was in his late teens, early 20s. Or this little girl who's 6-7 years old and is watching her parents abandon her and leave her at the hands of this, nasty creature.
Blob.
I would say blob. Yeah, I would say absolutely she's got it worse in that sense. The other thing that I want to say is that what I never really liked was the fact that And maybe it's because for me, I respond so much to the the total rock bottom that Luke hits at the end of Empire Strikes Back. It is, you know, he's doing it for the right reasons. He leaves Yoda's teaching to go and try to save his friends, but there's arrogance involved. There's a cocksuredness involved, and he gets the biggest slice of humble pie you could possibly imagine. Mm. Almost gets his friends killed, loses his arm in the process, finds out that this bad guy might be his father, mm-hmm. and he realizes that he may never have what it takes to really be a Jedi. I never felt, and I still don't, that Rey had that kind of moment. But if we're looking at her life in totality, yeah, I would say that she's probably every bit as damaged, if not more damaged, than Luke when we meet him.
But,
so, but it's a lot of off-screen stuff.
You bring it up perfectly, though, when you reference the humble pie moment. Mm. Does Rey ever legitimately have the humble pie moment? Does she? Does she? She has moments where she learns that her parents are dead, mm-hmm. Which is a devastation, but it's not a loss for her. She didn't walk into something thinking it was going to go one way and she was going to emerge victorious like Luke did on Cloud City.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's only fitting that Luke received that ass whooping at the hand of his father.
Right.
Something I remind my kids of quite often.
That's good. I have to remember that.
Yeah. Just remember what happened to Luke when he was talking sass to his old man. He walked out of there missing a hand and at the bottom of a city, hanging there.
Yeah.
Think about it. Sure, maybe your sister will help you out, but you're not having dinner or dessert tonight.
Here's something that I would have liked to have seen is there's that moment in Force Awakens when Maz kind of has to level with Rey, mm-hmm. that says, look, the family that you seek is not behind you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like she's saying, you have to understand, you have to know they're never coming back, but that doesn't mean that's not still in front of you. And she says, you know, through her tears, she says, Luke, mm-hmm. Now, I don't believe Maz never confirms. She just kind of lets, you know, Rey assume that that's what the case is. We all assume that that's the family that she's looking for. She goes to Luke, and we all know what happens. Luke's the curmudgeon. Luke's grumpy. He doesn't want to, you know, carry the mantle.
Well, it's the saber that makes Rey assume that Luke
right.
is, because the saber called to her, the right. saber called to her, and Luke was the owner of that saber. So when she hands it to Luke and he throws it over his shoulder, she's just like, well, you know, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah. And I think what I would like to have seen, or what I would imagine, is that that would have been a little more devastating for her, because she goes from thinking about her parents coming back to now putting all of her faith in Luke,
yeah.
and he rejects her. And it's kind of played off as maybe a little bit of comic relief, like, oh, Master Skywalker. And she's irritated.
Well, it's clearly she's confused, too.
But yeah, and confused. That's true.
Because Luke's own sister sent her out there.
Right.
With the full confidence that her message would appeal to Luke and he would return to the battle.
Yes.
But so she was totally confused. I mean, it's like everything anyone tells this girl in her whole life turns out to be a big lie. I mean, imagine the pretense under which she was left with Unkar Plutt to begin with. What kind of story did her parents tell her?
Uncle Unkar?
Uncle Unkar. Yeah, right. But I mean, you know, what kind of bill of goods was 5-year-old Rey being sold at that time? Her whole life is probably a big lie to her as she starts to get out there and see the galaxy for what it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like nothing works out for this girl. Even after she has achieved independence from Jakku and Unkar Plutt and that life living in the desert as a scavenger, even after that, she goes out on her first mission for the Resistance to bring back Luke Skywalker. And that turns out to be a big
bunch of, you know, it's a bad sale of goods to her again. And she's just like, what, you know, is anyone going to level with me? So she loses her cool with Luke and then splits and tries to take matter into her own hands. It's that moment then she goes to the Star Destroyer and she's convinced she can turn Kylo. So this is much like Luke going to face Vader. Without necessarily the family connection.
Now, I'm buying this. All right. I'm buying this.
So, of course, the family connection is what really adds a lot of resonance to that showdown between Luke and Vader in Return of the Jedi. Because we all know who everyone is and where everyone's from at that point. With Rey, it's almost random. So I met this guy who could really turn out to be someone who could help us out a lot, and maybe I can turn him to the light side of the Force, so I'm going to go to his Star Destroyer and convince him. And so the second she gets to the Star Destroyer, she gets presented to Snoke, and Kylo sees that as an in. So Kylo is now under the influence of the Force Dyad, with the two of them together. And he has enough power now to take out Snoke. Now, when we're watching The Return of the Jedi, we're under the impression that Snoke is some super all-powerful, almighty Sith. Perhaps even more powerful than Palpatine himself, right?
Right.
So, you think, well, that was the only way that he could have defeated Snoke is with Rey at his side and tools of deception and everything else. And the only way that he's going to get out of there with all those Praetorian guards is with Rey at his side. So Kylo's getting his first taste of the dyad in feeding off that power. And he's able to kill Snoke, and he's able to take on the Praetorians. And then it's just down to him and Rey. Rey turns him down. They both have a tug of war over the saber. Saber splits in half. Screen goes blank, and then the next thing you know, she's out of there, and he's laying there, okay? Hearing myself repeat all that doesn't sound very exciting, I got to be honest with you, because you don't see what happens. You don't know. And then the other thing is Snoke. Who cares?
Who cares?
If Snoke is just a puppet of Palpatine's, then who cares how Kylo destroyed him? It would have been inevitable because Kylo's a real person and Snoke is a clone. We're led to believe that, at least because of the pickle jars of Snoke's.
Well, you have to think as Palpatine watching Kylo cut down his master. Is that not following suit? I mean, wouldn't Palpatine be kind of pleased at that?
Oh, yes, the anger.
Right, right.
He's following in line with all of the Sith before him.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess from that standpoint, maybe Palpatine thought, okay, this kid is ready to then meet the ultimate master, meet me, and then, you know, the breadcrumbs are laid so that he can find him. He leaves this. It's really the transmission, right? It's the transmission that Palpatine sends out that sends everybody scurrying, including Kylo.
Yes.
As he goes off to try to find him. Because, and I think the way it's sort of sold is that, hey, no. If anyone's going to be the Emperor of the Universe, it's going to be me, not that old coot from back in the day.
I am having a hard time wrapping my head around the whole Snoke thing. And yeah. I really could use some hand holding here. I hope there's a book or something. You know, that Darth Plagueis.
Need some therapy?
therapy. Yeah, but it'd have to be over Zoom or something.
Yeah, right.
So the thing with Snoke is number one, you know, Rey does get really messed with by Snoke. Snoke shows no. He does not hold back with Rey and toys with her, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, he is like a public address system for Palpatine's evil dark side deeds and sorcery and stuff. But Palpatine's immobile. He can't get out there and do his thing.
Right. How? But I guess the question is, how autonomous?
Yes.
Was Snoke?
Where does Snoke end and Palpatine begin?
Exactly.
Is it Palpatine pressing the buttons and flipping the levers? Or right. is Snoke just kind of a guy who sort of does his own thing and is out there?
Yeah, is Snoke just under Palpatine's control, or is it is it much? I don't know. Is it much more literal than that? I mean, just rather than under influence, is he under his control?
Yeah, I like to think of it more of a Wizard of Oz sort of thing. When
yes,
when he's not in there flipping the switches and stuff, the lights are off and.
Which, funny enough, didn't we all make those comparisons after Force Awakens, Wizard of Oz, because Snoke was this, the projection of Snoke was
yeah.
gigantic on this huge throne.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was almost like right off the bat, JJ was trying to say, this guy is the biggest baddie you could ever imagine. I mean, literally the biggest baddie you could ever imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. And then there you go. He was nothing but a clone out of a pickle jar.
So Palpatine, then let's just say, controls Snoke. So he was yeah. tooling around. He's just playing with Rey in the throne room. And it wasn't until Kylo unplugged the Avatar and turned the system off,
mm-hmm.
then Palpatine, at that point, Palpatine couldn't extend his power. He couldn't extend his influence.
Right, right.
You know, and so.
So he had to come out of hiding, essentially.
Well, he did have three Snokes in a pickle jar he could have washed off and put into the game, you know.
But that would have outed Snoke for what he was.
That would have surprised Kylo, though, wouldn't it?
It's oh
no, you're back. And he's like, yeah, you couldn't slice me in half. Did you think you could? And he's like, well, I'll try it again. Palpatine's back on Exegol. Damn it, he took out another one. I only
like
have
he's
two
playing
left
a video
in the
game.
I only got two left in the pickle jar. And both are still fermenting. I can't. We can't. This isn't going to work.
Do you see what Registered Nerd did? He just completely diverted this whole show, rerouted this whole show, but actually it was good. Stuff. I'm glad he brought it up again.
That was pretty good. Do we have time to fly through the box
let's
set?
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
I want to talk about the box set real quick because let me see if I can do this. I've got another camera angle that I might be able to work here.
Oh.
Let's see. Yeah, here we go. Okay.
All right.
So check it out. This is the box set, and this is a Best Buy exclusive. So in the United States, you can only get this particular set from Best Buy. And this bad boy retails for $250. And I know what you're thinking. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot of money for movies that we probably already have. But this is not just any ordinary box set of Star Wars feature films. This is the first time that these movies have ever been put on physical media. Well, with the exception of Last Jedi, this is the first time these movies have been put on physical media in ultra high definition format. And I just want to give you some stats here about what that means. So you're saying, well, wait a minute. This isn't anything special. I've got Disney Plus subscription. I can watch these movies in 4K on Disney Plus. These physical copies, when you play them on a player that is capable of playing ultra HD videos or discs, you're getting 3 to 4 times the amount of information. So to give you a sense, when you're streaming these on Disney Plus, you get somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 25 megabits per second. When you're watching the physical discs, you're looking at anywhere between 60 and 70 megabits per second. That's 3 to 4 times the amount of information that you're seeing. So what did I do? The first thing I did, of course, I opened this guy up so you can see that's in a nice slip case. And this is for our Patreon folks that are on All Access. I'll do my best to describe this for those of you listening via podcast. But you have a slip case, and it's cut down the middle. On the front, you've got this nice image of the first Death Star. and it's kind of a raised, embossed aluminum, and it says the Skywalker Saga here, Star Wars, and it splits down the middle. You open it up, and yeah, and inside here is a book. And I really it's made to, it's cardboard, but it's made to look like steel. I really wish this was a steel book.
Oh, yeah. It sure it
for
looks
that kind
it,
of
it
money.
Looks it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really wish it was steel. It even has like the rivets and the screws here, but that's all cardboard. So we open it up, and the first thing that we see here is we've got the redemption codes. So if you want to get the digital copies, you can do that.
Ooh, I'm going to use your code. I just saw it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to that. And then we've got a letter here. We've got a letter from Mark Hamill. And it's on this nice little vellum sheet of paper. It's signed by Mark.
It says, Dear Jason, how did they know?
Wow. You know, hey, I'm a powerful, influential member of the Star Wars media. I'm going to read this letter real quick. It says, what an extraordinary journey it's been. Back in 1976, when Carrie Harrison and I were testing for our roles in what was then called The Adventures of Luke Starkiller, as taken from the Journal of the Wills, Saga 1, The Star Wars. We know a podcaster that has titles of his podcasts that are about that long. There's no way we could have known what an incredibly rich and imaginative set of adventures this obscure little space movie would launch, inspiring 8 more chapters to tell the entire Skywalker story. For some of you, that journey began with us over 40 years ago, inviting Star Wars into your lives from the seats of just a few dozen theaters in its first days of release. For others, you may have joined us somewhere along the way, from the harrowing saga of young Anakin's descent to the dark side in the prequel trilogy, or the introduction of an entirely new generation of heroes in the sequel trilogy. As Carrie once said, Star Wars is about family, and that is what we have all become, one giant community that shares the common experience of these stories and the fundamental values they instill in us. Whether you're a relative newcomer to the Star Wars galaxy or a longtime UPF, that's Mark's term for ultra passionate fan, I am deeply thankful for your continued enthusiasm and dedication to George's faraway galaxy, which will continue to grow with new storytellers building an even bigger galaxy filled with heroes, villains, action, romance, and of course, the Force. May the Force be with you always, Mark Hamill. So a very nice letter from Mark Hamill that sort of opens this thing. But I have to tell you, Jim, and I don't want to be that guy. I don't want this to be about, I love this, I hate that. But when I saw that letter, I so badly wanted it to be from George Lucas. When I open up the ultimate box set of the Star Wars saga, I want the letter to be from George Lucas.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, and I thought for sure that's who the letter was from when you first took it out of the box set itself. And
I understand why it would be Mark. If it's not going to be George, it is the Skywalker Saga. They're very clear about that on the cover of the box set, that it is the Skywalker Saga. So you're going to get the guy that best, he's the emblem, he's the avatar of Skywalker, the Skywalker is Luke, and that's Mark Hamill. But there was a part of me that remembered, you know, getting the VHS box set, you know, years ago, when it would have the letter, the note from George on the side, and we first learned about new adventures to come in the saga, and it just, I really wish it had been from George. I really do.
I still miss the old annual fan club letters that you get from George Lucas. You know, keep it down in there. I'm reading this new letter from George. where did I leave off? You know.
Well, let me just take you through the presentation here. So we've got this. So the discs themselves are housed in this book, and each film is represented by some concept art.
That looks great.
So looks episode great. One,
yeah,
Phantom Menace, Doug Chang, and the Naboo gunship here. The Naboo fighter. And the first disc is the 4K Ultra HD version. And the second disc is the regular Blu-ray version. So each film is represented by two discs. In terms of the film, you got the Ultra HD and the regular Blu-ray.
Well, so, I mean, why would you want the regular Blu-ray once you have the Ultra HD one? I mean, what's the purpose of selling you both?
It's a really great question. I think what it comes down to is, let's say you've got multiple TVs in your house, but your main TV is going to be the one that has the souped up player that's capable of playing the Ultra HD format. Mm-hmm. But you might have a bedroom TV that has the old Blu-ray player, and maybe you want to watch. That's what I always kind of liken it to, because when Blu-rays first came out, a lot of times they would package them with a DVD copy. And I always thought that was for the portable DVD player that you threw in the back seat of the car for the kids. And so in this case, maybe it's for the old Blu-ray player that you still have knocking around.
They should have put out two different sets and given you the option. And if you wanted to buy both, then you buy both. This just seems like a way of squeezing you for some extra cash, because I think most people will have a preference with these discs. They'll either use one or the other.
That's right. And once you experience the 4K version, you'll never throw that regular Blu-ray into the player, I can assure you. So we got episode one, represented by Doug Chang. We've got episode two in this beautiful photo or image from Ryan Church from Attack of the Clones.
Looks
episode
great.
Three, yeah. Eric Tiemens.
Mustafar.
And then here we go. Of course, we get into the Ralph McQuarrie stuff and episode four.
Docking Bay 94.
Yes. Yeah. Episode five. Some more. This is the Cloud City, of course, of Bespin.
Some of that Cloud City jazz.
And this is one of my all-time favorite McQuarrie images, because, you know, I am a Return of the Jedi kid.
Yeah.
I do claim to be from the OT generation. I am, because I saw Return of the Jedi, when it first came out into theaters. And so Return of the Jedi has always been my sentimental favorite, because it's what, Jim, what you witnessed when you saw A New Hope in the theaters, when you saw the Star Destroyer, you know, come overhead. It was that moment, and that scene where Darth Vader shows up on the Death Star 2 is, you know, that thing that Star Wars memory that I'll never forget.
Plus, the Imperial Shuttle is one of the coolest starship models that have ever come out of the Star Wars history.
So then we get into the sequel trilogy and Andre Wallen and some concept art here. Now, if you look at this, here you've got a very different Rey and a very different Finn. And in fact, I think back at this point, this would have been Kira. And I think it's always been Finn.
Sam.
But, it was Sam. That's right. Sam and Kira. So very different from the John Boyega and Daisy Ridley characters that we would meet.
Running toward the Millennium Falcon on Jakku. Yeah. That's garbage. What did she say? It's garbage?
That's garbage. All right. So here is the image that represents The Last Jedi. This is by Seth Engstrom. And I did think it was kind of interesting that they chose the death of Luke Skywalker to be the representation of this film.
You may call it the death of Luke Skywalker, but I just call it Luke Skywalker's final moment. There you go.
All right. Final moment, Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Because he doesn't really die.
No.
What does he say to Leia? No one's ever really gone.
Right.
There you go.
And here's the final confrontation from episode 9 by Andre Wallen and Stephen Toppin.
Which is odd.
So this accounts for, you find this odd as a representation for this film?
I do, because it's
concept art of the two. For those of listening to the podcast, it's concept art of the two in their battle on the remains of the Death Star 2.
Right, on Kef Beer. But their backdrop is that of a TIE fighter. And I don't ever recall the saber duel taking place in front of a TIE fighter like that.
Boy, Jim, I did not even notice that.
Yeah.
I did not notice that. Of course, you're going to be telling us a little bit about the art of book. And then we get into, now this is where everybody wants to talk about and hear about the bonus features. So
yes.
Each film is represented by two discs and then a third disc. So each film is actually represented by three discs. And the third disc is the bonus feature. So disc one is the 4K Ultra HD version. Disc two is the regular Blu-ray. And then disc three is bonus features. And so that section of the book where the discs are located has a lot of really nice photos of behind-the-scenes stuff. We've got shooting the Grand Arena, the miniature for the pod race. We've got Anthony Daniels on the set of Attack of the Clones. We've got Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen and Ian McDiarmid in, of course, the siege of Coruscant and the kidnapping of Palpatine. They're filming that sequence. And then
all black and white footage, too.
All black and white, yeah. So, the images for the films themselves were of course, color and then black and white representing behind the scenes. And here's a great shot of Mark Hamill and Anthony Daniels and Alec Guinness filming that great scene where Mos Eisley Spaceport, you'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy in the canyons there of Tatooine. And then that is not Murin. Who is that? Oh, Phil Tippett. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Phil Tippett. They're working on the miniatures for the Battle of Hoth, the AT-ATs. And here's George. I guess this will be all right. It'll do. That's fine. Looking at the model of the Death Star 2 for Return of the Jedi. And then we get into Force Awakens and Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker. And there you go. So 27 discs in this. And just some thoughts I want to just pass along about this. I got to say at the outset, if you're looking for bonus features, new bonus features, you're going to be disappointed in this set. There's really nothing new here. And I'll just use the episode 4. And what I did for this review, I didn't, of course, watch all of the films and all of the bonus features. I popped in each disc. So every one of the 27 discs went in. And the first thing I wanted to look at was the picture and audio quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say at the offset, if you're looking for a really thorough audiophile, videophile review, go to thedigitalbits.com. Bill Hunt, he's a great guy over there, and he's got a fabulous review. But I'm just going to tell you, as a guy that has an Xbox One connected to a TLC, a flat screen TV, 55-inch, I'm going to tell you what I experienced with a soundbar, with a TLC soundbar. I will tell you that Episode 4, A New Hope, looks absolutely stunning. I wanted to sit and watch the whole movie because I have never seen it like this before. The amount of detail, every glob of grease, every greebly that George stuck on every piece of the set, you can see. You almost lose track of the action because you're seeing things you've never seen before. And it looks so real. It doesn't look cheesy. It doesn't look like a 1977, space opera like Star Trek. It looks, when they talk about that lived-in universe of George Lucas in the original trilogy, they're not kidding. When you see it in 4K Ultra HD, you see the painstaking efforts that he went through to make this look like a real lived-in universe. It's absolutely, I can't call it beautiful because George's Star Wars universe in the original trilogy is not beautiful. It's not. But it's incredible to look at that. It is the McClunky edit. So it's if you've seen A New Hope on Disney Plus, that's the version that you get. Mm-hmm. All those changes, all those tweaks are still there.
And that was originally part of George Lucas's plan before he sold the company. He was going to re-release the films in 4K. He had already been working on the sound mix and the edit, and it was George Lucas himself who inserted McClunky at the end.
See how much better it is?
Yeah.
McClunky.
Yeah. How could I be sitting on that sound? How could I be sitting on that sound bite? It's so good.
You have it,
Robert Thompson. I've got it here. Yeah, but this thing froze up. But yeah.
Want some more McClunky?
Oh, sorry. No. That's Harrison. That's Harrison. Where's that? Here we go. This is the one.
McClunky. See how much better that is?
Yeah. Classic.
Say it with me. McClunky.
Yeah, it's the McClunky edit. But I got to tell you, Jim, I mean, this was one of those moments where it was like seeing it. The only thing I can liken it to, and you've referenced this before, when you saw the trilogy back on TV in widescreen.
Yeah.
And you couldn't take your eyes off it. For me, I will tell you, it's that dramatic.
Really?
Watching episode 4 of New Hope. It absolutely is incredible. I mean, when Carrie is, when Leia, Carrie Fisher, is putting the plans to the Death Star inside R2-D2, you can see the freckles on her arm. I mean, it's just incredible. I absolutely loved it. I went through all of them. One of the things that struck me was how soft the prequel trilogy looks relative
soft.
To the original trilogy. Yeah, there's a softness to the picture.
Hmm.
You know, one of the things to keep in mind about the prequel trilogy is that so much of it was done digitally that in order to make the live action stuff work alongside in 4K, work alongside the digital, the CGI, they have to do a couple of things. One, they have to do digital noise reduction on the live action stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, they have to add film, like a film look process to the CGI to
yeah.
try to balance out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Filter it. They want to
yep.
filter it and try to
exactly.
create a consistent look throughout the entire frame.
So I find Phantom Menace in Attack of the Clones to be a little underwhelming, but by the time they get to Revenge of the Sith, that's when I start to see, whoa, they're really making this feel and look like original trilogy. You start to see the grittiness of the universe. You start to see those grease marks on the walls and all the greeblies and all of that. So it was interesting to watch that transition. And then, of course, the sequel trilogy looks incredible, like you're used to. I mean, that's not a surprise. But let's talk real quick about the bonus features. Most of what you see as bonus features, these are all from the digital release from 2015. So when the film showed up on iTunes and Vudu and all that for the first time, there were some new bonus features there. And of course, the Blu-ray, the 2011 Blu-ray edition. A couple of glaring omissions here. Those beautiful concept art galleries that were kind of a hallmark of the Blu-ray release,
that
original Blu-ray release,
mm-hmm.
those are gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to hold on to your original Blu-rays for those. The Making of Star Wars classic documentary, not on this.
Mm.
You got to hold on to that original Blu-ray.
Narrated by William Conrad.
That, right? And then the Empire of Dreams documentary.
Yeah.
Which is actually on Disney Plus.
Yes.
But not on this box set.
Yeah.
So I'll say, if you're interested in bonus features and seeing something from the archives that you've never seen before, this isn't the box set for you. But if you're interested in owning the very best quality version of these films that you could possibly own on home video, that will just blow your mind from an audio standpoint and a video standpoint, you got to pick these 4K versions of the films up. You really do. Because they will make you feel like, in a lot of ways, you're watching the movies again for the first time. They're just incredible. There are a few things I kind of laughed at. Like, there's a moment when Han's coming back to Echo Base on Hoth, and he's riding the Tauntaun back into the base. Ooh, does that stick out like a sore thumb? You know, the animation of that, you really go, that's a special effect there.
The stop motion photography.
Yes, right, the stop motion and all of that.
Yeah. That was always kind of a dicey shot to begin with. It was cool as hell.
Yeah.
And it really was, it really did make you think of some of those old stop motion features that were
created. Ray Harryhausen, the
Ray Harryhausen stuff,
right.
Like Jason and the Argonauts and all of that.
King Kong.
It definitely has that flavor.
But yeah, nowadays with 4K, some of that stuff does stick out. It does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you know what? It's kind of cool too, you know?
I love that. Yeah. I really do, because I kept thinking to myself when I'm watching these, like, man, this is Star Wars, warts and all.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The good,
sometimes
the bad.
It's okay to see, you know,
yeah,
some of the strings or whatever.
Real quick, I want to mention too that there was the Last Jedi has been released on, already been released on 4K Ultra HD. But it did not, the physical copy did not contain the score only version of the film. So some of these discs have, you can just watch the film with just the score behind it, none of the dialogue. That was only available on the digital copy. This is now a part of this this physical copy release. All these films will be all these films, with the exception of I think TLJ and Solo, are going to be available as individual releases, or they're already available as individual 4K releases.
Good, because I want to see artwork. That 4K New Hope.
Yeah,
but
you
don't
want to
throw
it
down. I don't want to throw down on the whole box set.
Yeah, so. Do you have a player that's capable of the Ultra HD?
I'll get one.
Yeah,
you know, if it means watching a new version of Star Wars, yeah. I mean, that's always been the way that I've upgraded my home entertainment system is when I need it for Star Wars.
Yeah.
I got my first DVD player the day Episode 1 came out on DVD. It was the first DVD purchase I ever made in my life, Ep 1. That's where I got a DVD player. I got a Blu-ray player for the box set that came out in 2011. I didn't need nobody. I got Disney Plus only because of Star Wars, for crying out loud.
Right.
Let's face it. The only reason we're talking is because of Star Wars, for crying out loud. The only reason we're friends is because of Star Wars, for crying out loud.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm excited because in addition to all of the Skywalker saga being released to 4K Ultra HD as individual releases, so is Rogue One. And I'm disappointed that it didn't come in this, but I would have really liked to have those been kind of the Solo and Rogue One films to have been treated as almost like bonus discs in this box set. You know, you're throwing down $250. I would really like to have had all of them.
Yeah.
27 discs, $250. You know, you're looking at a little more than $10 a disc. I got to say, I'm so thrilled with the picture, you know, the video quality of it. I don't regret the purchase at all. It's a nice collectible. Again, if you're looking to mine for never before seen bonus features, it's not in this.
Yeah.
And Bill Hunt over at Digital Bits does make one comment that I was really sobering to me was, he said, let's face it, this is probably the last time these films will be offered as physical media.
True.
Yeah. So subsequent releases of these films will probably be digital only.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another reason why I was kind of glad that I sprung for the box set. But I do have to go out and pick up that Rogue One in 4K because I'm excited to see that. And so if you put these individual releases together on your shelf, they now have new artwork that kind of makes them all, you know, work together, have a similar theme. So anyway, so that's my review of the Skywalker Saga box set. I think that it's a great collectible item, and if you just want to kind of get them all at once, go ahead and take the plunge. I think you'll find it worthwhile. But if you don't have a player that's capable of playing that 4K and you're just buying them for the Blu-rays, probably not worth the cash.
No, but I think it's totally worth it to buy it for the McClunky.
For sure.
Chess Pokututa, please, that Kringo. Yeah, Oscar.
Yes, I bet you have.
McClunky.
What?
McClunky.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
McClunky.
This is ridiculous.
McClunky.
I got a bad feeling about this.
McClunky.
Don't everybody thank me at once.
McClunky. See how much better that is?
going to wrap up this week's show, Rebel Force Radio. And apologies to Jimmy Mack. I think I spent so much time talking about this Ultra HD box set. We talked at the top of the show that we were going to have two reviews, the box set as well as the Art of book. And unfortunately, we got to push that off to next week. But that gives you all the more time to prepare and me to prepare.
Yeah, you know, I really haven't had enough time with the book itself and kind of just flipped through it and said, ooh, look at those pretty pictures. And then I moved on to the next page. So a more thorough review will be coming next week.
What do you say, though, Jim, to those that say, well, I saw all the leaked photos. Do I really need to pick up the book? What do you think about that?
Well, there's so much text in there about the creative process behind Episode 9 that I find that stuff very interesting. Beyond the artwork, there's a lot of tidbits about what went into the making of the film on a creative level. And I find that stuff to be very interesting. And it's unfortunate, again, another behind-the-scenes book about the Rise of Skywalker that includes very little about the presence of Emperor Palpatine in the film.
Really?
Yeah, I was saddened to see that there isn't much concept art from Exegol in general, or the Sith Temple, or any of that business. But some great shots of Sith troopers, Knights of Ren, and really incredible concept artwork of aliens and droids that didn't make it into the final film. Starships, just great stuff that you never know when some of these designs that didn't make it onto the screen will actually show up in a future Star Wars production. So as we know that a lot of ideas don't get thrown away in Star Wars, they just get put aside.
All right, I gotta ask a question though. Do you think that the book tends to focus on more of the Rise of Skywalker Colin Trevorrow version? Or does it feature a lot of the stuff that ended up in the J.J. version?
Well, I find it's primarily the J.J. Abrams
the
film.
J.J.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I don't see much from the Colin stuff. But there is, a few things. A few concepts from the Colin version did end up in the novelization. And that stuff is represented, like the creature that Kylo runs into on Mustafar when he's trying to get Vader's Wayfinder. He comes across this giant creature with a spider on its head.
Spider thing, yeah.
So we have concept of art of that creature and a few other moments, too. But we'll have a more in-depth review next week for sure.
Awesome. All right. Well, big thanks to James Arnold Taylor for jumping on with us and joining us in the cantina. Always great to catch up with James. And don't forget, he also has a podcast, so go ahead and search him out and subscribe to that, Talking to Myself. And he's got a great YouTube channel, and he's such an inspirational guy. And if you just need some positivity in your life in this time, he's a great source for all of that. Another great source for positivity in your life is Rebel Force Radio on Patreon. As you hear us making references on the podcast to things visually that we're looking at, you can see all of that if you are a member of the All Access tier on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio. It's not just the All Access tier. We have other tiers as well, something to fit your budget. But all of the proceeds go to Rebel Force Radio, ensuring that we are able to bring you the quality Star Wars analysis, reviews, interviews, et cetera, that you have come to expect. Plus, bonus content. RFR Comlink is there, RFR Q&A, 50 episodes of our RFR Rush Hour, Clone Wars Declassified Remastered. You know you're going back and you're revisiting classic Clone Wars. Well, why not listen to our analysis as it played out years ago on Clone Wars Declassified? Of course, other special podcast releases and audio surprises. That's all available to you at patreon.com/Rebel Force Radio. Link on our website. Send us an email, show@rebelforceradio.com. Voicemail line 708-320-1737. That's 708-320-1RFR. Also, follow us on social media. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. Great place to follow us is on all of those channels. And don't forget, Rebel Force Radio can be found on Twitter at RFR Rebel Force. The official website, rebelforceradio.com. And if you do subscribe to Rebel Force Radio via a podcatcher that allows you to leave us a review. We do appreciate those reviews. We make it easy for you. We just have one rule.
Make them good and turn your mic on.
And, of course, Rebel Force Radio is proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. You can find the full lineup of podcasts at evergreenpodcast.com. You can also find RFR streaming. We're all over the place, including WGN Plus, Jedi News, YouTube, iHeart, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you're going to find Rebel Force Radio. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you next time. Looking forward to Jimmy Mack's review of Art of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, and lots more discussion. Stay healthy, stay happy, everybody. We're going to get through all of this together. Love you all so much. For Rebel Force Radio, I'm Jason.
And I'm turning my mic off every opportunity I get, apparently. Jimmy Mack.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
Say with me, McClunky.
Feels good, doesn't it?
Much better that way.